Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in African American Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Robricus Toles, the host of the channel. Today, we'll be talking to Dr. Elwood Robinson about his recently published book, Hard Fighting Soldiers, The History of African American Churches of Christ. Dr. Elwood Robinson, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Elwood Robinson, I wonder if you could begin this interview by telling us a bit about yourself.
Okay, yes. My name is Edward Robinson. I was born and reared in Jacksonville, Texas. That's in East Texas, some, let's say, 100 miles, 110, 20 miles east of Dallas. And that's where I grew up. And attended public schools there from K until 12. I'm from a family of 10, mother and father, and had a blessed to have four sisters and five brothers. And one of my brothers are deceased. Both of my parents are deceased. And grew up in Jacksonville. And from there, I attended Southwestern Christian College in Terrell, Texas. And then went on to do graduate work at Harding School of Theology, University of Illinois, and earned my terminal degree in African American history from Mississippi State University. And so I have a lot of interest in American history in general, but African American history in particular.
Yes, sir. It also, Dr. Robinson, how did you come to write Hard Fighting Soldiers, the History of African American Churches of Christ?
Yes, that's a very good question. Well, Churches of Christ, they are the Church of Christ. It's my faith tradition. That's the religious tradition that I grew up in East Texas, and I'm still a part of that tradition. And so as I began to grow and explore academic opportunities on the master's level, I began to just kind of do research on prominent figures in African American Churches of Christ. And so it started like little by little at Harding grad, of course, and kind of even before that, Southwestern Christian College, you know, that's a Church of Christ school. It's a HBCU, and it's under the auspices. In fact, it's the only accredited school that's under the leadership of African Americans in Churches of Christ. And then from that school, I went to Harding School of Theology for my master's degrees. And Harding is also a Church of Christ related school. And so it was kind of a natural fit for me to kind of be interested in the history of my particular faith tradition. And so So here I am with this new book, Hard Fighting Soldiers, A History of African American Churches of Christ. But it was a long journey, a long journey.
Yes, sir. It also, Dr. Robinson, is this your, fifth book?
Well, actually, this is book number eight.
Yes, sir.
Yes, my first book was on S. R. Cassius. See, I did my dissertation at Mississippi State on S. Samuel R. Cassius, was a enslaved African from Prince William County, Virginia, who converted to the Stone Campbell Restoration Movement or Churches of Christ, and he became a leader in this particular fellowship. So that project there is what laid the groundwork for what I have done over the years, and in this recent book, which is basically a synthesis of what I've tried to I've been doing over the years. And my dissertation was revised in 2007 and published by University of Alabama Press. And so in Cassius, his learning his story, that's what kind of opened up, if you will, the floodgates for me to kind of learn more and do more on African-American Churches of Christ.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And Dr. Robinson, I was looking at your tables of contents in the book, and chapter one is entitled Brothers in Black, Enslaved Africans in the Stone Camel Movement. And I noticed in that chapter, you do a lot of contextualizing the history, kind of giving a background of what was going on during the early years of the Stone Camel Movement. And I was wondering, how did Alexander Campbell directly influence African Americans with his Church of Christ doctrine that he espoused?
Okay, yeah, thank you. That's a good question. Alexander Campbell is originally from Ireland, and he comes to America in 1809. He's a part of the Presbyterian Church, and he breaks from that tradition and becomes a Baptist, and then he's going to be kicked out of the Baptist largely because of his emphasis on baptism for the remission of sin. So the Baptists tended to be more Calvinistic. In other words, God saves man, while Arminianism suggested that man can contribute to his own salvation by believing, by repenting, and especially by submitting to baptism for the remission of sins. And so those are some doctrines that African American Churches of Christ have picked up, you know, through the influence of Campbell, as well as individuals whom Campbell influenced, such as David Lipscomb, who published The Gospel Advocate. And one of the interesting things is that when Marshall Keble, I know there's a chapter in this book on Marshall Keble, and Marshall Keble was the premier evangelist in Churches of Christ, really black or white, but particularly African American Churches of Christ. He planted a lot of churches that are still thriving today. And one of the interesting things is whenever he established a church, Marshall Keble would enroll that particular congregation on the Gospel Advocate subscription list. So yes, those spiritual believers who were recently converted to the Stone Campbell tradition, they were nurtured and nourished on the teachings of the Gospel Advocate, which placed a lot of emphasis on things that Campbell emphasized: the baptism for the remission of sins, the leadership structure of the church, having a plurality of elders and deacons, and some other things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And what are some of those mother churches that Marshall Keeble founded, or some of those churches that were the first in as far as African-American Churches of Christ?
Yes, that's a good question. Yes, some of those mother churches were often churches that were established either in the antebellum period, okay, that is before the Civil War. And the oldest church that I was able to find documentation on was a church that's actually in Salina, Tennessee, called the Free Hills Church of Christ, which is still an active church. It dates back to 1816. So that's the oldest known African-American Church of Christ that's still in existence. And then you move on to like Alabama, you have churches that are in the Tuscumbia area that were established basically during the antebellum period or right after the antebellum period. And you see others that are springing up in the state of Texas. The oldest known African-American Church of Christ is the Antioch Church of Christ, which was established in 1865. So you had former enslaved Africans who picked up the religious views of their owner. And after slavery, they continued to espouse the doctrine of the Church of Christ. And so, and that's one of the mother churches in the state of Texas. So you have various churches that can be regarded as mother churches, and that they were the first to be planted. And many of those are date back to the antebellum period, and some right after the Civil War.
Yes, sir. And Dr. Robson, I know you already mentioned Marshall Keeble and about mm-hmm. him doing some church planting. Who else could be considered founding fathers of the African-American Churches of Christ besides Marshall Keeble?
Oh, yeah. In fact, we can even kind of go back. I do have a chapter on founding fathers. And by founding fathers, I mean men who actually predated Marshall Keeble. And one in particular, actually there are two, a gentleman by the name of S.W. Womack, who was born into chattel enslavement in Middle Tennessee. Now he, along with a black man who's also named Alexander Campbell, they collaborated and established what is now known as the Jackson Street Church of Christ. That's the congregation that really nurtured Marshall Keeble and helped to develop him as a preacher. And so those two individuals left an indelible mark on the life of Marshall Keeble, his preaching style, as well as his social outlook in many, many regards. And of those two, S.W. Womack and Alexander Campbell, I would have to say that Womack definitely left the greatest impact because Marshall Keeble married one of his daughters named Minnie. And so that there was not only a spiritual bond there, but there was also a family bond that was quite significant as well. So Alexander Campbell, Black Alexander Campbell, S.W. Womack, and then of course S.R. Cassius is definitely what should be considered a founding father, in that he was active preaching and planting churches years before Marshall Keeble emerged.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Yes, sir. And in part two of your book, the title is African American Churches of Christ and the quote race problem in America, 1900 to 1930. And chapter four deals with the racial thought of the white Churches of Christ during this period. I know that this period was kind of the nadir was after Reconstruction leading up to the 20th century, but period during segregation and all that, and the rise of the Ku Klux Klan and just all those different things. Can you discuss what the white Churches of Christ racial thought was during this period?
Well, yes, that's a very good question. In fact, one of the things that I do in that particular chapter is point out that there was a white educator from South Carolina, Thomas Pierce Bailey, who delineated what was known as the racial creed of the Southern people. And I'll just read a couple of these. It says, the white race must dominate. The Negro is inferior will remain so. This is a white man's country. In educational policy, let the Negro have the crumbs that fall from the white man's table. And basically, when you analyze and examine those particular tenets, if you will, of the so-called racial creed of the Southern people, another one include let the lowest white man count for more than the highest Negro. Basically, all of those particular tenets were espoused by most white people in Churches of Christ. And this particular chapter is entitled Making Love to Our Daughters. And that's the title of it, the subtitle is The Racial Thought of White Churches of Christ. And I that might seem somewhat disturbing, but the truth of the matter is that there were many white people in the Church of Christ and in society in general, especially in the South, who feared interaction between black men and white women. And so that's actually a quote actually from one of the white leaders in Churches of Christ who made that statement that we don't want to get too close to the black people. Because if you do, the next thing you know, they'll want to be making love to our daughters. And so the ideal of miscegenation, racial sexual mixing, that was something that was taboo in the first part of the 20th century. And so that affected the formation and creation of African American Churches of Christ, because that's one of the reasons why they would invite preachers such as Marshall Keble in so that he could preach to the black people so that they could help establish a church, but they wanted those black people to go to the black churches. They did not want them to come to their church because of the fear of miscegenation, racial and sexual mixing. And I make the case that that was largely the motivation for the keeping black people out of their schools as well as out of their churches. The idea that some white Christians, or many, if not most white Christians, feared the interaction of black men with white women. Okay, so that's in a nutshell the racial thought of white churches of Christ.
Yes, sir. And also, Dr. Robinson, part three is titled "The Age of Marshall Keble, 1931 through 1968," and I wanted to talk a little bit about chapter 8, "Nonviolent Gadflies: African American mm-hmm. Churches of Christ in the Quest for Civil Rights."
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. A chapter I hope that readers would find very interesting as well as informative. And basically, I do my best to probe and examine the involvement of African American Churches of Christ in the civil rights movement. You see, one of the things, you know, going back to Alexander Campbell, mm-hmm. Alexander Campbell tended to downplay social issues. When you consider, for example, like how historically Churches of Christ have focused on like the New Testament pattern. So in other words, our focus has been on like Acts through Revelation, the book of Acts through the book of Revelation. And so, and what's unfortunate about that, if you neglect the four Gospels and the Old Testament prophets, you miss out on some vital teachings concerning God's concern for the outcasts, for yes. the widows, for the orphans and others. Okay. And so and that's kind of spilled over into African American Churches of Christ. And so Brother Keble, and again, being influenced by the pages of the Gospel Advocate, he tended to downplay, at least publicly, the participation of black people in social and political issues. But I make the case in chapter 8 that there were a number of our people in African American Churches of Christ who were actually out there agitating. The phrase "nonviolent gadflies" comes from a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. In his treatise, a letter from Birmingham jail. And so, and he references that, you know, we want to be like, just as Socrates felt it necessary to create tension in the mind of individuals, you know, we want to be nonviolent gadflies. And so here we have this situation here where we have individuals such as Patricia Jenkins, who was a devout member of the Church of Christ in Nashville. And she was a part of the Freedom Riders. And so to man capture her story, Mary Carr and her mother, who desegregated a public school in Nashville, Tennessee. Many people know the story of Fred Gray, who worked hand in hand with Marshall Keble, who worked hand in hand with Martin Luther King Jr. And because he was there in Montgomery. And he's a good example of one who went against the grain of Marshall Keble's political and social outlook. But there were other individuals whom I found and learned about. K.K. Mitchell, a prominent preacher in Montgomery, Alabama, who participated in the boycott by helping transport passengers during the Montgomery bus boycott, and Carl Pitts and his stance that he took, as well as the politics of African American Churches of Christ, in that they were concerned about making sure that in this 1964 election, they were concerned, hoping that LBJ would win the election, and because they were concerned about their social and political rights. And I found sermons by R.C. Wells and Eugene Lawton, who are recent, you know, and these are men who were very outspoken about the issue of race and trying to do all they can to help topple racial barriers. And so, yes, so nonviolent gadflies, I hope that that will generate a lot of interest, information, and inspiration for leaders, for readers as well.
Yes, sir. And also a chapter that there was a lot of inspiration for me, especially with me being a Southwestern Christian College alumnus. Chapter 11, The Magic of Education, African-American Churches of Christ in the Pursuit of Knowledge. Mm-hmm. And in that chapter, I noticed that you discussed Southwestern Christian College, and you spoke about it earlier, saying that that's the only college sponsored, ran
yes,
African-American Churches of Christ.
Right, right. Okay, good. Yeah, that's true. And I tell you, Southwestern Christian College stands as a testament to the legacy of G.P. Bowser. G.P. Bowser, see, was a contemporary of Marshall Keble. He converted from Methodism, the Methodist Church, to Churches of Christ, and he brought over his gifts, particularly his gifts of knowledge. He was well-educated, and he used this knowledge to help create a journal called the Christian Echo, in 1902. And he was basically the primary champion for education. He launched the school, the Civil Point Christian Institute in Nashville, Tennessee, out of the church building that was housed at the Jackson Street Church of Christ in Nashville. Then it moved out to Civil Point. And then that school fizzled out, and then he will eventually launch a school, the Bowser Christian Institute, in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And that school fizzled out as well, largely because of the context of World War II. People are on the move, leaving the South for better opportunities. And so G.P. Bowser, along with his proteges, which included Orrin Hogan, J.S. Winston, as well as G.E. Stewart and Levi Kennedy, launched what is now Southwestern Christian College. It was born in 1948 in Fort Worth, Texas, Southern Bible Institute, and then it moved in 1949 to Terrell, Texas, where it remains to this day. And so, yes, G.P. Bowser believed in the magic of education. He believed in giving, making sure that all Black youth, Black boys and girls, had an opportunity to acquire an education, because he believed that that could indeed make a difference in their lives. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, Dr. Robinson, we've taken up a lot of your time, but I have one more question. What are you working on now?
Yes, right now, there are a couple of projects that I have tentatively began to explore, and they include, I'm intrigued by Orrin Hogan and a relationship that he had with a white journalist by the name of Jimmy Lovell. We have this, I wrote an article for a book that came out I believe last year, and that article was published in a book, and I looked at the relationship between Arden Hogan and Jimmy Lovell. I'm hoping that I can expand on that. That's one of the things I have in mind. I'll have to do a lot more work on it, but that's one thing I'm tentatively working on, as well as there are some sources at Abilene Christian University, and they have been recorded by a gentleman, the late R. Vernon Boyd, who interviewed a lot of African-Americans, and their interviews were transcribed, and those are available. And right now, thinking and hoping to do an anthology, collect those writings, edit them, and which would allow African-American men, African-American women in Churches of Christ to speak for themselves, because I do believe, and I am sure, that they have a story. They have a story to tell.
Dr. Robinson, that sounds like some good endeavors. I want to thank you for being on this show today. I really enjoyed it. Take care.
Thank you for having me. God bless.